You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
I think for our style of music, the organic fluctuation is very important. We shift into a different riff or something, and maybe the tempo fluctuates in a way that would be kind of weird if we mapped it out. We're like, okay, we're going to drop 5 BPM here, you know? And like, I don't want to think like that. I just want to play the music. And I will never, you know, rag on a band that uses click tracks or any of that stuff. I don't care if that's their thing, that's their thing. But for us, there's no greater joy than going out on stage with our instruments plugged into amps and making this shit from scratch.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Matt here from Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. I hope that you had a killer weekend. I most certainly did. This Vox and Hops episode is presented by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal are Montreal's premier metal promoter. And if you are ever in Montreal, trust me when I say this, if you are looking for a killer show to go to, Heavy Montreal will have you covered. I am beyond stoked to have Heavy Montreal behind the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I'd just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I would love for you to tell a friend about the podcast. If there's someone in your life that just loves extreme music and loves craft beer, well, you should definitely let them know that the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast exists. You could tell them that there are over 400 episodes where I sit down with some of the world's best metal musicians. We talk all about their lives and music while enjoying craft beers. If you would encourage one of your metalhead beer loving friends to become a brand new Vox and Hops head, that would be something that I would truly appreciate. Now, today on the podcast, I'm very stoked to be back with Zachary Ezrin of Imperial Triumphant and Folter Comma. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops episode number 451.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today, I'm very stoked to be back with Zachary Ezrin of Imperial Triumphant and Folter Comma. Zach, it's so good to be back with you. Always a pleasure to hang out with you. Last time we hung out was here in Montreal. You were here with Zeal and Ardor. You guys just destroyed that crowd that night at Studio TD.
That was a great show.
Blown. I think it was the first time I'd seen you live. I think so.
I think so.
Dissonant and disturbing and just exactly what Imperial Triumphant is supposed to be about. We are recording this on a very special day as my beautiful wife walks into the room right now. This is Valentine's Day, and we swapped this interview up for a different day due to some scheduling conflicts, and I only realized today and or yesterday that it was Valentine's Day that we're doing this, so happy Valentine's Day to my wife that just walked in.
And, happy Valentine's Day.
All of that just to say, Zachary, how you doing?
I'm good. I also didn't realize it was Valentine's Day until we had switched. So I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to be chatting with you on such a special holiday.
It is a special holiday, and I have a special beer just for that. It is Vox and Hops, where I hang out with my metal friends talking about their lives and music while sharing craft beers. What do you got on your side there, Zachary, that we're going to be sharing tonight?
I have a really local craft beer called Red Stripe.
Yes.
It's a Jamaican lager. I like these, actually. They go down really easy, and they're also like maybe 1 ounce smaller than your regular beer. So it's kind of, you kind of feel like a giant when you hold it, you know?
Cryptopsy would get so mad whenever they give us those 33 CLs in Europe, and we're like, we want 2 cases of beer. And then they deliver these mini bottles, 2 cases, and we're like, no, we want true 2 cases of beer because we're Cryptopsy. We like to drink beer.
It's so funny about Europe. They either give you like the mini beers,
yeah,
or you're in parts of the country where they give you like big, the mega beers, and everyone's just like with their flagon.
I saw what you were drinking before we pushed record, and I said I'd tell you what we're recording. My first Red Stripe, I believe, was in Sheffield, England, on the Cryptopsy Beneath the Massacre tour with Ignominious Incarceration and Trigger the Bloodshed. I can't remember all those names, back in 2009.
Wow.
And we were at some horrible dance club on a day off in Sheffield, England. And I don't like dance clubs, and I don't go to dance clubs. And I did that night, and I drank my first Red Stripe that night. It was, I guess it was memorable, since I remember that much of it all.
Of course. You remember, seem to remember a lot. What are you drinking?
I am drinking a perfectly thematically correct beer. It's called Bière de Câlin. Câlin in French means hug. So it's like a hug beer. It's like a two lovebirds, you know, two pigeons. It's from L'Espace Public. It's perfect for right here. It's a 7.5% Sœur d'Amour, so a love sour. just amazing. I love it. And I saw it today and I was like, this is too thematically perfect. So I'm taking that. Shout out to Simon and the rest of the peeps that run L'Espace Public. Love them. I'm going to crack this and I would love to hear about your craft beer evolution. I know last time we were together, you were drinking like a big double IPA. I remember when I first had you on the podcast, it was at the beginning of
4 years ago,
the pandemic. I remember it was one of those when Thirsty Thursdays were just happening and I had you booked at 8 p.m. and then I had a Thirsty Thursday at 9 p.m. and I remember like literally finishing wrapping up with you and then jumping into Thirsty Thursday, never expecting seeing what Thirsty Thursdays would grow into over the years. So how has your craft beer palate evolved since, 4 years?
It's a great question. Well, since we've spoken, we've done a lot of touring. And so I've been able to try, cheers, of course, been able to try a lot of different beers. I as an American, I got to go drink Guinness in Dublin, which is like something everybody always talks about.
Yes.
It was pretty wonderful. I had many, many, many. And it was, and then I we were playing in Belgium. And me and my bass player got ripped before the show.
That's what happens. Yeah, because they give you the case. They give you your typical rider amount of beers, except they're all 8%ers.
Yeah, they're so strong and so smooth, which is such a dangerous combo. So we got those. Where else have we been drinking beers? That's just wonderful. I mean, I'm not a huge beer drinker. I'm really more of a tequila guy. And lately, apropos, I've been drinking a lot of champagne, Prosecco. But I think I've been enjoying a lot of sour beers and stuff like that, like it, kind of just funky stuff like that. I enjoy a good IPA. And then actually, since we've spoken, we did play the in 2021, I want to say, with the Decibel Metal and Beer Festival.
Oh yeah, shout out to Albert. And
he's a wonderful man. And we were paired with Adroit Theory Beer Brewers.
Yeah. Shout out to Mark.
And it was very funny. I was like, you know, I was just thinking like classic me, like just being like, look, I don't care what this beer tastes like. I just want it to sell. Let's just make a delicious beer. I don't care. And he was like, don't worry, we're going to make an Imperial Russian stout.
Yeah, they make and monster like, stouts, yeah.
I was like, dude, that sounds disgusting. And he goes, and he said, don't worry, we're going to send me your coffee that you guys make, because we do a coffee. And he said, send that to me and we'll put it in the beer. And I said, that sounds absolutely gross. And so I send him the coffee, and then the day of the festival, we arrive and I meet him. We try it and it's 11%. And I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be so foul. And I tried it and it was so smooth, so delicious. And it sold out almost instantly. I was very, very impressed because I'm not a guy who usually crushes really strong beers. In fact, you're going to really hate this. Lately, I've been drinking like Bud Lights, but I can defend myself on this. To me, it's not beer. And if you don't think about it like a beer, it's actually not bad.
So if you're not thinking of it as a beer, what do you think of it as?
like an alternative to water, like just a refreshing beverage. Like when they're ice cold, it's great. It's just if you dare to consider it in the same category as beer, that you're like, absolutely not. And I think people might agree with me on that. Like, it's definitely, because I would agree, it's definitely not beer, for sure.
It's a crusher, I'll give you that. Adroit Theory does make killer beers, typically big, heavy beers, and I've had a few of them. They made a collab for Pig Destroyer that was just killer, and I've had a whole bunch of other stuff. I had Mark on the podcast, very interesting dude.
Yeah, very nice gentleman. And yeah, their beer was incredible, and yeah. I got to say, like, there's definitely something to be said about, like, well-made craft beer. There's, like,
it's something that it's like, it's different than a beer you might be drinking, like a regular just crushing beer all day party kind of beer. This is like, it's more akin to a wine, I guess, you know, where you're tasting it for flavor and you're enjoying it with pairing it with food and stuff like that. So there's definitely like, it's a multifaceted beverage for sure.
I definitely agree. And it's like music. You can look at the Bud Lights as radio rock and Imperial Triumphant as a craft beer.
For sure. Yeah, we definitely aren't going down that smooth.
No, you're not. Talk to me about something that when I had you on last time, I guess I didn't know or you weren't doing it at the time. Talk to me about the champagne, the Prosecco on stage. Where did this come from and the whole idea of it? And I can only imagine, hypothetically, in a bumpy trailer, some of these bottles exploding sometimes.
It's. I'm glad you brought it up. It's definitely something that has evolved over the years of touring. It started in 2020 when we were at to open for Behemoth on like a streaming thing.
Yeah, that was huge then.
And it was an unbelievable opportunity.
In like an old church, am I crazy?
They were in an old church. We were in an old speakeasy because we're from New York and it just seemed more appropriate. And we were thinking like, what can we do? What sort of, you know, theatrics can we bring to a live stream? And I ended up pouring a bottle of Dom Perignon on like the Statue of Liberty, like a miniature Statue of Liberty, and just like to just waste it, you know, and to see like the most decadent thing I could do.
Yeah.
And then we were just thinking the next tour after that, we were like, what if we just poured champagne in the mouths of the front row, like sort of as this sort of like Eucharist ritual of decadence, you know? And we did that and it was cool, but we were like burning through a lot of champagne.
Yeah, very much.
And
so
I was like, the first few shows, it was crazy. I was buying like Moet and like
like
Cooper Heidsieck and like crazy expensive.
Hundreds of dollars.
Because I was like, we're Imperial Triumph and this has to be super decadent, you know? And then I quickly realized like this is not financially stable, this plan. And I just happened to become friendly with through a friend of a friend, a gentleman in Nashville who owns a distribution company for liquor. And he's like, I can absolutely hook you up with some Prosecco. So we have a connection where it was pretty funny. He called us up on tour. We were playing in Nashville and he says, Come by the warehouse and I'll have the guys drop off a pallet. I was like, pallet?
Holy shit.
And I was like, all right. I mean, and we were on like a short run too. We were doing like 12 shows and we end up filling the van up with about 124 bottles of 12 cases.
Holy
of
shit.
Champagne or Prosecco. And it was so funny. The rest of the tour is just clanging in the back. And then just every show, all right, let's grab another one. And now it's crazy because we have... I just have bought cases of champagne everywhere in my house. I hide them, just like build furniture out of them, try to like
get them out of eye line. Yeah.
Any birthday party, I'm bringing you a bottle for sure. And it's interesting, you know, we started doing it in Europe.
How did you get them over there?
Well, in Europe, they give a shit about what's on your rider.
So you ask so
we
for
just
it.
Put, we okay. just put it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was wondering if you're like cargo freighting it over.
Exactly. They're pretty cool. And it's cool because in like different parts of Europe, they'll give you different stuff, you know, like you're in Spain, they'll give you cava, you know, in Italy, they give you Prosecco, in France, they make sure
champagne.
You get
yeah.
champagne.
I played champagne once, like the city champagne.
That's sick.
It was sick. Yeah.
And you know, it's pretty funny. Like we played Hellfest this summer and it's such a brutally hot day. And I didn't understand the physics of champagne as much as I do now. And so I'll open the champagne a little bit to just to twist it a little bit so that when it's time to do it, I don't have to be twisting forever.
Yeah.
So I'm walking in the backstage area, getting ready to go on stage. And I just twist it a little bit and just explodes this bottle of Moet. And so I was like, oh my God, like I just, I had the cum shot way too early. And I called my tour manager. I was like, I need another bottle. And he goes, they don't have another bottle.
No, shit.
So I had to make do. But ideally, it is kind of a, it's a ritualistic thing that sort of, you know, we now it's not just pouring in the in their mouths, but we're spraying it into the crowd. It's this ritualistic cum shot of decadence, and it's pretty wild. It's really interesting because we usually do it in the middle of the show, and after that, we go into a song, and the energy in the room has changed. The crowd gets a little wilder all of a sudden. And it's, they're almost like uninhibited, as if they're drunk on this, which they're not, of course. But like it does, you know, shape the room a little bit. And as we are a band that doesn't speak during our set, it's very important to us to connect with the audience through ways that we, you know, we interact with them in ways that aren't talking to them. And what's really interesting is now that we're starting to play bigger shows and perform with like giant Live Nation theaters and stuff, we're getting a lot of pushback.
I've been waiting for you to stop talking to ask this question.
Yeah, man. And it's, you know, I've had some fights with some stage managers because it's in our tech writer, but they don't read it sometimes. So
does that come from like venue staff, or does it come from the other band's crew?
No, it comes from the venue staff. I've never had another band complain about it.
Because you're sticking up the stage type thing? Like, if you're touring with Guar, you know you're touring with what it's going to be, you know?
Exactly. I think often it comes along with, like, they don't want us getting, you know, monitors wet.
Yeah,
They don't want alcohol on stage. They don't want glass on stage. Yeah.
And you're doing both.
So we were trying to figure ways out. But also, at the same time, it's like, maybe it won't be forever, you know?
Or it's at the point where if you guys get big enough, you could just pay the fee and it's worth paying the fee.
It is. But I will say this, it doesn't work as well when you're playing to 1,000, 2,000 people.
I understand.
Yeah. And there's a
huge
15-foot pit.
I hate the photo pits. You
know? So it's like you can't, you can't. I can't even get in. Like sometimes I jump.
Yeah. But who knows what the fuck's going to happen when you do that, as older as we get.
To do that, and then sometimes it's too far.
Exactly.
So I will say this to those who want to see Imperial Triumphant and want to witness what we've been calling the Golden Ritual, is that it's not forever. And it will be certainly only at certain venues and maybe certain – it'll become a more unique, special thing. And I think that's important to the Imperial Live show, because we can't just keep doing the same thing over and over and over. We got to keep surprising our fans and changing things up. And if whatever we do moving forward will still be extremely decadent and wild and ritualistic, but that part of our career might be slowly fading away.
Interesting. I hear that. About not communicating with fans directly, was that always a thing with Imperial? Did you ever speak to the crowd, or is it something that's evolved over time as well?
As soon as I put the mask on, I stopped talking to the crowd.
Did you notice that there was a bigger like wall of like between yourself and the audience at that point? Did you have like a harder time connecting with them? I'm sure you found ways over the years, but initially, and then the evolution of that persona, let's say.
I think it started, we were thinking, oh, this is cool. We won't talk to them. You know, like we're going to be aloof. But I quickly realized that it's very important to connect to the crowd. And even if you don't have stage banter, you need something to bring them in. But at the same time, I firmly stand by this thought that we will not look that cool with my speaking voice coming out of my mask, you know? So I was like, this is not an option. Like, I'm not going to be like doing insane, you know, growls through the mask and then be like, hey guys, traffic was crazy today, you know? Like, you know, like I'm not going to just switch to my speaking voice. That takes away the performance, which I think is so crucial to our show. And so we've come up with a lot of ideas. You know, we have a disembodied voice that comes on that's sort of like a a ringleader of this ritual that talks to the crowd. My bass player will go out into the audience and take a solo. I was going to bring that up. Like that. Something like that really connects with the audience. And sometimes that's like the loudest that they're screaming.
It's like this catalyst for the crowd.
Exactly. That connection's, it's very, very important to us. And I think that it is fun to have these restraints on us where we're not really in a position to say like, how's everybody doing tonight? And then I'm like, that sounds a little quiet. I said, how's everybody doing tonight? You know, like, I can't do that little shtick. So I need to think outside the box. And that's kind of like where I love to exist.
I can see that and feel that. Well, something that I do find interesting about you wearing the mask and then you as a human, a normal person in the music scene, because a lot of people know who you are. It's not like this whole sleep token, anonymous, masked member thing. You still are very much Zachary in the public eye from Imperial Triumphant, but when you're on stage, you're different.
Yeah, it seems like a real hassle to...
So horrible. Could you imagine? In the music industry, when everybody knows everything, it's ridiculous.
It's a modern age where it's not like it's easy to find out who someone is. And it's also just like, not only is it a hassle, but it's like, this is my career. So I'm not working at a bank and I need to have like a pseudonym so that nobody Googles my name and sees that I'm in a death metal band. You know, like this is what I want to do and why I like my name. So I'm keeping it. I'm going to keep it. We did name our masks, but that is something that's more of like, something we did along the lines of like how Kiss has, you know, they each have a nickname for their makeup, something like that, you know. That's not like, I don't expect people to call me by my mask name,
which is what I didn't write down.
We all took names after different gods.
What's yours? So it starts with an I.
Apollo.
Okay.
Yeah. It's the Greek god of sun.
Which makes sense. Yeah.
Exactly.
I like
it's
it.
Like, yeah, the rays of the sun, you know? So I thought that was appropriate.
I do love how you guys have created, like, performance is above all. And my experience when I saw you guys with Zeal and Ardor, is the pure chaos of it all while it's still being controlled. So I read that you guys write together. So talk to me about writing together controlled chaos. It's absolute madness. And when you know it's finished.
Sometimes we write together. Sometimes someone writes everything. We don't put any restraints on how we can write. Sometimes a song is written. We were like particularly under rehearse a song before we go in the studio.
And then freestyle it a bit.
So that, yeah, it's a little raw when we record it, and we'll do a few takes.
I think that's so cool.
Live, which I think is very important.
Like all of you together, like in a room?
Yeah, with
like
no
old school. Really?
Yeah.
Your drummer's really fantastically spectacular, though.
He's pretty good, but even him is like, he's not a human metronome, and we don't want that.
Organic fluctuation.
Exactly. I think for our style of music, that organic fluctuation is very important. We shift into a different riff or something, and maybe the tempo fluctuates in a way that would be kind of
hard to map
out. Weird if we mapped it out. Yeah. We're like, okay, we're going to drop 5 BPM here, you know? And like, I don't want to think like that. I just want to play the music. And I will never, you know, rag on a band that uses click tracks or any of that stuff. I don't care if that's their thing, that's their thing. But for us, there's no greater joy than going out on stage with our instruments plugged into amps and making this shit from scratch. Just like, you know what I mean?
I think it's awesome. I think I just did a chat with Rorcal and I poked him like hard about the creative differences of the permissiveness of creative approach to black metal. You guys fuse black metal with avant-garde jazz. Roarkal is much more sonically dissonant. Death metal is such more rigid, the constrictions that we have of what we're allowed to do for some reason. But black metal is a much more permissive genre, and I'm wondering where that came from and why it's like that. And obviously you guys are like heavily leaned into the jazz side of things, where there are no fucking rules. Everything is just creative freedom. Yeah. And
it's different every time. You know, if you listen to a jazz record, oftentimes by the title, it'll say like take two or
exactly.
take four, you know?
Yeah.
And that's because every time, every take was different. And they're just trying to capture an energy and a vibe.
It's so cool that death metal is so fucking calculated. Like everything has been thought about, every little bleh. It's that one, you know?
We're fortunate enough to have played together for many, many years. And that's a huge part of it that I think a lot of bands suffer from, you know? Like if you're a band and you've been together for a decade and now you're at the point where you're sending riffs to each other, that's probably fine. But if you're a new band and you guys all live in different parts of the world and you're sending each other tracks to record together, it's going to sound pretty robotic and cold and soulless, I think, in my opinion, because you guys haven't actually played together. And I think that's so, so important that you play with the people that you're recording with and that you're performing with, because it's a conversation at the end of the day. It's
everyone has a pulse, right?
Exactly.
And it takes a time for musicians' pulses to sync up together.
Exactly. You know, when you're playing with your band, like
when we're in the pocket,
yeah, we're in their pocket. And when someone maybe has like, and that's another thing that I love about my band is if someone messes up, you know, there's a mistake, the other guys can catch them and pull them back, you know, like pick them up. Like someone drops behind the beat, okay, we'll all slow down and, you know,
that's
come
awesome.
Back.
You don't give the dirty eye from Christian Donaldson when I fuck up. Especially now that we are on the click track and I'm in his ears now. He's like, dude.
No, and again, I don't ever trash anyone who uses the click track. Some music, you have to do it. And and I've seen bands that play with click tracks and they sound phenomenal. So it's not... it's just not how we work.
I think it's cool. I think it's the freedom and the creative juices and flowing and like waves and catching that. What you record tends to is like just a glimpse into what that song's potential is in that particular day and something that you're satisfied with. You guys have worked with so many, like a bunch of prolific producers, notably like Colin, Trey, just unbelievable to have that. Those ears in there from bands that are also used to experimenting and
yeah,
freestyling and just trying stuff out and having genreless music from both of them. Just incredible.
Pretty fortunate we are. It's very cool. And like I said, like, the song that we record 2 years later after touring it, hundreds of shows, like
completely different,
it'll be different. And that's how it was always meant to be, you know? And
I think that's cool.
That's cool, you know, like whatever. When you listen to live records of like Hendrix, it's totally different. The Grateful Dead made their whole career out of like the live version. My best friend's a Deadhead and he never listens to a single studio album, you know?
That's cool. So that's interesting. Very different than Cryptopsy's death metal. I love this shit. I love...
But Cryptopsy is one of the best death metal bands ever to exist, so... it's in my top five for sure.
Well, thank you. Well, something else that you guys do a lot of and I think is very cool is doing covers of stuff. Radiohead recently, other stuff I meant to write it down, but I didn't write it down. But and you totally just reinvent the song. You're not doing these covers like other people do where it's basically just a cover. It could be that band playing it. It's a completely reimagined version of that track. Talk to us about doing that and how easily choosing these tracks come together. Where do those come from? And how you reinterpret something in an Imperial Triumphant type of way.
It's not easy to choose. Well, I guess it's easy to choose, but it's not easy to reharmonize, you know? And that's kind of my favorite thing, you know, like... When there's a cover that's a reharmonized version of whatever the original is, like to me, that's so much cooler, than just like, oh, we're gonna do the cover, but it'll have blast beats, you know, like,
exactly. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'm gonna scream right. instead of sing. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was, I think we were just on tour thinking about doing a little, you know, a covers EP or something, just to, I don't think we felt creatively ready for a new record, but we were still like wanted to put record, make something. And so we thought of these ideas, and when everyone was talking about them, I was like, yo, this is going to be nuts. Like, how are we supposed to make like motor breath sound like us? How are we supposed to make Radiohead sound like us? You know, like these are songs that are so different and not dissonant at all. But that in lies the challenge and the creative puzzle, which I think we all sort of thrive on.
It's like you almost, if you guys like to make your life hard.
Well, it's more fun, you know? I mean, would you rather, I like people say, like, would you ever do like a Portal cover? It's like, no.
No, it's already noisy.
I was like, first of all, our Portal cover will sound like Portal.
You'd have to make it melodic to make it different.
Yeah, I would never play it. I would never be able to capture the genius that is Portal. So like, it's perfect the way it is, but like a metal imperial version of, you know, Night in Tunisia. Like that's okay. That sounds weird. I'll check that out. You know, like,
I know, like every time I would, I'm friends with Katie and she sends out all the press stuff, Susperia PR. I'm always like, oh shit, that's cool. I gotta listen to that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I think that's more exciting as far as covers go, even though, yeah, metalheads probably want to hear a song that they know better, you know, like,
but hypothetically you're like opening up the spectrum of your fans' palettes too. Cause if you're doing stuff that is outside of the metal realm and they're like, oh, well, if they're covering it, hypothetically, I might like it too. Cause I like them and they're influencing me to try something new.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't know Radiohead, but I'm fairly certain Johnny Greenwood would probably like our cover.
Hell
just
yes.
By judging his taste in scoring.
Yeah, he's super sick.
He's super sick. Yeah. So I feel like, yeah, these guys might like us, so why shouldn't metalheads? You know, there's tons of weird stuff out there.
Hell yes. That new The Smile is really good. It's like two episodes in a row that I'm saying this. My the podcast, and people are going to be like, okay, dude, we get it. You like The Smile, but I literally said it last week too, but I'm saying it again. Check out that new The Smile, people.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hopsheads? I just want to take a little moment about Cryptopsy's upcoming tours. That's right. I'm talking about the Scream of Perseverance tour and our headliner dates that coincide with that tour called As Summer Burns. The Scream of Perseverance tour is kicking off at the end of May and runs all the way until the end of June. We are supporting the mighty Death to All. We are going all over the United States and we are hitting some of Canada. So excited to be honoring the legendary music of death alongside amazing musicians that performed on these albums. Even more stoked to be doing some headliner dates in some cities that I've actually never played in. If you are planning to come to any of these shows, you should definitely grab your tickets by going to voxandhops.com/summer, and you will be able to grab all of your tickets there. That's voxandhops.com/summer. Do it, people. Come hang out with me. Enjoy life, metal, and craft beer in your hometown. Come to a show. We're going to have a great time. Now, enough about all of that. Let's get back to the episode.
I feel like New York is such an important part of your band and your identity. Where does that come from and why is that? Like, I'm from Montreal and I love Montreal and
check
I can
it out.
Feel.
I'm going to step outside for a second.
Oh, really?
Can you see?
I can see. Yeah.
Can
okay.
You see
so
that
it's, you have no choice but to.
It's everywhere, man.
Wow.
Just surrounded by skyscrapers, and many of them are having a lot of Art Deco referencing.
Interesting.
Or references, because they're built in the 30s. And it's just in, like, even the typography of a lot of restaurants and buildings is that Art Deco style. Like, it's just ingrained in the culture. And it is something that's not unique to New York, but it's very, very prominent here. And it's something that I think is unique to metal in the sense that I don't think a lot of bands have
embraced that. No.
Embraced this sort of world because it's not what they know.
It doesn't work. Yeah.
Doesn't work. You know, if you're from, you know, a rural town in Indiana, or you're from Norway, you might not have the same upbringing. You know, you might not understand that sort of thing, and you might focus more on nature and stuff like that. And that's also very cool.
It's a big part of your identity. I mean, you've put that into the band, and that is important. And I think a lot of people try to like invent something that isn't a part of themselves, and that is a hard thing to upkeep.
You have to write about what you know. And that's, you know, I didn't even grow up Catholic or Christian, so I don't even know. I didn't even grow up with that sort of like rebelling against God and devil worshiping stuff. Like, that wasn't even a part of my life. So like, I really just want to be authentic to myself and to my music and my art. And for that, I need to be true to myself. And what easier way to, and then to just talk about your surroundings, you know, like, obviously, you know about this.
That's so cool. And then you did the photo shoots downtown, like,
oh yeah, we shot in the Chrysler building. We shot in
Do you got to get permission for that, or did you just like renegade it?
No. I know people, but yeah, it was all very official. But yeah, we shot in front of the Brill building. We shot during like the height of the pandemic. It was like we shot in front of the MetLife, the Grand Central Terminal, like in the middle of the street, because there's no cars back then. And it was like, there's no way. And we did that was the big centerfold for
Decibel
magazine, yeah. Which that's a photo you probably would have a hard time taking now, without getting run over. So that was like, yeah, like stuff like that I always love. And, you know, photographing the band in New York City is very important because we look like some fucking statue you'd see, you know, like.
It's awesome. I love it. I love that you've committed to the visual aesthetic of the band. It's a whole part of the persona, and it's a part of you guys.
This whole band is like an art piece, if you think about it, you know. It's not just about the music, even though that's obviously the majority of it. But to me, the art piece is everything. The lyrics, this album art, the presentation, the stage show, like everything is an opportunity to express ourselves creatively and build this little brand that we've developed. And, you know, not every band has to do that, obviously. But for me, I just thought it would be cool to do that. Like,
especially with the no talking on stage, you sort of have to have more to give people to bite into.
Oh, I don't have to do anything on stage, man. My mask does everything for me. It's amazing.
Does it smell?
It's really great.
I remember Corey talking about his mask stinking. How do you...
I mean, it's not great, but we have like, I have like a spray I put down, spray down the masks after a show.
You had to learn that though. Like,
yeah, if it's a hot day, we'll leave them out open outside so that they kind of like dry out. I mean, yeah, but everyone's like at one point like thrown up in their mask. I'm
really?
Sure. And, oh yeah, of course. And or just like, yeah, I mean, it's a part of you, you know. It's kind of interesting to have this piece of, I guess it's not clothing, but it's something you're wearing. That you've worn, like, imagine a piece of clothing that you've worn hundreds of times. Yeah. And it's just slowly gotten, you know, damaged, or you keep using it, and it's just like becomes like this totemic sort of like.
Do you guys all just have one of your masks?
Yeah.
That's dangerous. How do you fly with it? That's my next question. What if you lose it while you're flying? Where does the mask go when you're flying?
It doesn't leave me.
It's a carry-on.
It's a carry-on.
Because I know Vincent flies with his hat. He has a hat box. So.
Yeah. I have it. We have like big Pelican cases. Okay. Every time we fly, it's, you know, sir, can I open your mask? We've got a lot like, sir, are you in the band Ghost? You know, like.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm like, everyone's always curious about it. You know, whatever. Like. It's they're one of one, but not for long. We're working on getting new ones made because we've had the same ones for 7-8 years.
My next question is there going to be an evolution in the visual mask aesthetic?
Maybe.
Yeah. He winked, people, for the audio podcast, but
who knows what the future holds. But
as much as you love aesthetics and everything, you seem to also really like Gibson guitars. Talk to me about that. Is this a collab that you got? Are you endorsed by them now, or is it just you showcasing your love of them?
No, I am endorsed with them now. Connected with them I think in early 2021, and I became very good friends with Cesar, who's like a really, really nice guy and a really, really like great player, which I feel like, you know, if you're the CEO.
Oh, he's the CEO.
He's the CEO.
Holy shit. Cause he's not the rep. I was expecting him to be a rep.
No, my rep Matt is also a really great guy. He's also a really nice guy and also a decent player. But, I got involved with Gibson through Cesar, and he's just a really nice guy who just wants people to play Gibson. He's a fan first, you know, he's a great player. He's a generous guy, and he's a really, he's doing great things for the brand, you know, which I think they had a bit of a dip.
Yeah. I was totally going to ask about like Gibson not being showcased in extreme metal very much compared to like ESP, Ibanez, I want to say. Gibson seems to have been more rocky, let's say.
Yeah, I never thought of myself being a Gibson player, but after playing them, I was like, oh, okay. So these are, these are completely shreddable. There's a reason why they're so good or like so well known. It's because they're very, very high quality guitars.
Slash plays a Gibson like crazy.
Oh, he does. Okay. He plays a lot of them.
Not that crazy.
Yeah. I mean, dude, you know who plays a Gibson is
Jimmy Page.
Bill from Carcass.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah.
He's got a really nice vintage Gibson collection. We played a couple shows with them in US and yeah, man, like his sound unbelievable. And yeah, I really like working with them because I wanted to have a brand collaboration, you know, like I wanted to have a connection with the brand, you know. I didn't want just like, oh, hey, you want to represent our company? Well, here's a discount code. You can buy whatever you want. Like, I don't need that, you know. I wanted to like, visiting my rep in New York, Matt, and talking with him, and he helps me with like my little projects because very few Gibsons I have are stock at this point. I get them stock and then I rip them all the shit out and customize it my own and put gold shit all over it.
Obviously. Just, yeah.
That's kind of how I like the creativity of customizing.
Anti champagne stains.
Oh my gosh. When I came back from all the European touring and shit this year, I came back to the Gibson like HQ in New York and like, I was like, I need a setup, guys. My guitar is so sticky and gross, covered in champagne. And they were like, what the fuck did you do to it? It's like the metal parts are like getting rusted and stuff. But I love that, you know, like
it's like a war story.
Battle worn instruments, you know. I don't want my guitars to be pristine. I want them to have the character that I've played hundreds of shows with them. To me, that's cool.
I toured with it was Steve, the guitarist of Belfegor back in the day, and he was teching for Wattain, and he got their guitars after a tour, and they were like sitting in the warehouse or something after the tour, and he took them to set them up for the next tour, and he opened it up, and they were full of maggots.
Yeah, like that's
same but so different. Much, yeah.
That's so much more disgusting than.
but all the guitar heads that are listening right now are pissed because I cut you off because you mod your guitars. They want to know what you put in them.
Oh, I mean, what do I do? I mean, it's a lot of like aesthetic appointments, you know, like cosmetic shit. Like for my Flying V, I have Grover Imperial tuners because they look very Art Deco. A lot of my pick guards that I design, I I trace them myself and then send them away. Yeah, because they don't make shit like that, you know?
The aesthetic. I love it. I love the aesthetic. It's something that Cryptopsy, we do not work on our aesthetic enough. And I'd love to the extra little thought, motivational thought. Hopefully after this talk, it's going to fuel me more to have more of a thought process towards the aesthetic of Cryptopsy.
It's only if you want.
No, exactly. Yeah. But I think it's an important little step up.
It makes decision-making very easy, you know? We've chosen, like, same way when you think about, I mean, it's branding at the end of the day. Yeah. When you think about, like, Starbucks has dark green, or, Google has, like, the red, blue, green, like, little circle, you know, whatever. Like, there's, like, just color association that exists.
I feel like we've branding. Done that. But the whole extra little mile that you guys have gone, the same way that Behemoth has gone in that direction too. So,
yeah, Behemoth is like, when you think of Behemoth, what do you think of? Like, they love the devil. They love
burning like Bibles.
Super hardcore, anything super that's hardcore Satan shit, like that's their thing. And they're like authentic as hell about it because they're from Poland and that's a really like Catholicism has that country by the balls.
True. So
like,
still to really, this day.
Exactly. So that. To them, it's means so much more, and that's why people realize that and they acknowledge that.
I love it. So you're motivating. You're motivating me. I like it. Speaking about motivating me, this is, I guess, fight the hops for myself would be have a more controlled aesthetic direction for Cryptopsy.
I mean, you don't have to.
No.
Cryptopsy's doing pretty well.
I know. I like to continually evolve and challenge myself. So I do this new segment for the past year and a bit called Fight the Hops, where I ask my guests a short-term goal, something that they're hoping to accomplish within the next month, 2 months. What are you doing right now, Zachary, to fight the hops?
Dude, I got short-term goal, medium-term goal, long-term goals.
Good. So you got this shit going on
in my home. Yeah, I'm a very career and goal-oriented guy. Short-term, I would say, well, Folter Kammer has a new album coming
out. Yes.
In April. We're going to be hitting the road late March for a short run. Yeah. Just a short run, but we will be probably touring a lot more this year. There's a lot of... that's a really, really exciting project that I think people hopefully will really enjoy because it's sort of a, you know, black metal meets opera twist that I don't think has really been done in the metal sphere yet, at least not to my knowledge. And then Imperial Triumphant has, we just announced the Vile Luxury reissue, which has been remixed, remastered, and with a new album cover.
Nice.
And yeah. And we have new masks for the guests that are available.
Nice.
Working with them. They're really, really cool. And we really worked extremely hard to get the create a product for our fans that is high quality and extremely interesting and cool. And we will have some tours announcing soon. And I will also say we're working on a new record at the moment, which I think will turn a lot of heads.
Hell yes. How do you manage to balance between so many projects, these two projects? It's hard to have one band, especially when you're so focused and have such an artistic vision with it. How are you dividing yourself into something else now that's somewhat completely different?
This is nothing, man. I'm also CEO of a music video production company,
really?
Vile Lux Studios. We've been shooting a lot of music videos now for other bands.
What bands? Give them some shout outs there.
We just did a Vitriol video, and I'm about to begin production on an Inter Arma video.
Oh, are they coming back? I hope so.
Oh, yeah. And their new stuff sounds amazing.
Oh, yeah. I fucking love
them. Even pitching Nurgle on videos when we were on tour together.
Yes.
And I think he likes my ideas.
Yes.
But I have doing that. I have, yeah, like I said, I'm working on this graphic novel, which is like a new world for me to explore. I've been writing a pilot with this guy about some TV drama idea.
Jesus.
It's like, yeah.
Zachary, you're a busy man.
I like it. It makes me feel like I've done a good job if I've been busy in a day.
I agree. And I tackle the same way.
To think creatively. That's kind of what brings me the most joy on this earth. So the more I can do, the better.
Hell fucking yes. I can't remember if I asked this last time. It's the classic Vox and Hop wrap of questions. Hypothetically, sure. It has evolved in 4 years. So if I did ask you last time, I apologize. What is your hangover cure? Perhaps you told me last time, but maybe it's changed in the past 4 years.
Yeah, maybe I think you told me. I don't remember what I said. I'll give you my hangover cure now. I haven't gotten hungover in a while because I've just been sticking to tequila. And I guess, I don't know, I've just been slowing down. But my hangover cure is, you know, you wake up and feel like shit. You get a Coke, Coca-Cola, Diet Coke if you prefer, a bacon, egg, and cheese from a bodega, a Gatorade, blue if you can find it, for the electrolytes to rekindle your brain, pop an Advil, and smoke a joint. And then you're at least 75% better.
You'll definitely feel better in the next hour or so after that.
Yeah.
Especially if you can sneak a nap in, too.
Oh, of course. Exactly. I anyone listening to this podcast, I encourage you to try it at least. I don't think it'll do you any harm.
No, you've already done the harm to yourself at this point.
Zachary, precisely.
Thank you so much once again taking the time to hang out with me, talking about your life, talking about music, talking about craft beer. I had a blast. I loved it. I'm excited for all this stuff coming up. Folterkammer, the new Imperial Triumphant, all the videos that you're working on, this graphic novel. You're a busy guy, and I like it very much. I appreciate you, and I'm looking forward to hanging out with you really soon.
Thanks so much, man.
Massive cheers.
Cheers.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right today. You know that I love and appreciate that. Man, this is another awesome conversation. I'm so stoked to have Zachary back on the podcast. He is so interesting. I love his approach to the aesthetics of a band, how it's basically an art piece. I think it's just a very, very interesting way to approach creating a band, creating an entity. It's something that I've been thinking about a lot since I had this conversation, and I'm trying to do what I mentioned and drag some of that into Cryptopsy. How can we make Cryptopsy more of an art project, let's say? What can we bring to it? Back in the day, Lord Worm used to be an entity, and it'd be interesting to have some calculated elements dragged into Cryptopsy's entity to become something more artistic, such as Imperial Triumphant. Massively stoked to have hung out with you again, Zachary. You're awesome, and I can't wait to see you again. Now, if you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast's mailing list. You could do that on my website, voxandhops.com. That's voxandhops.com. And when you do that, you shall receive one email a week that contains all of the details of everything that has happened in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. You will get to see which episodes I dropped recently. You will also get to see which episodes I have coming up. You will get to hear about any projects I have in the works for the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. And you will also be updated on whatever I got going on with Cryptopsy. That's right. Cryptopsy, we just dropped our brand new album back in September of 2023, and we are doing a whole bunch of stuff. We are planning a massive 2024 in the works. Right now, we are in Europe on the Unquestionable Blasphemy Tour alongside Atheist, Almost Dead, 72 Legions, and Monastery. And then after that, we are coming back to the U.S. and some Canada dates alongside The Mighty Death to All. That's right. I'm so stoked that Cryptopsy is opening up that tour, the Scream of Perseverance tour. I am so goddamn stoked about that. And we even have some more things in the works that I'm super stoked about. You also get to see which albums the Vox and Hops album review crew have reviewed recently, and you will get to see which albums Jerry Monk, Vox and Hops' metal architect, has added to the Brutal Awakenings playlist. There's always a lot of stuff going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, and I hate when you miss a single thing, so do me a favor and sign up to the mailing list. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts. I hope you have a killer rest of the week. I will be back next week with another episode on Tuesday with Andromeda Anarchia, the vocalist of Zach's other project, Folterkammer. But until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
Bowie. Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.